All right, I'm recording, okay? Story time with David and Mommy! Right, we're gonna keep reading Kidnapped, and today is actually with David, because David's in here playing with his Legos. Hooray! So we're continuing with Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson, Chapter 6, What Befell at the Queen's Ferry. As soon as we came to the inn, Ransom led us up the stair to a small room, with a bed in it, and heated like an oven by a great fire of coal. At a table hard by the chimney, a tall, dark, sober-looking man sat writing. In spite of the heat of the room, yeah, I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything. In spite of the heat of the room, he wore a thick sea jacket, buttoned to the neck, and a tall hairy cap drawn over his ears. Yet I never saw any man, not even a judge upon the bench, look cooler or more studious and self-possessed than this ship captain. He got to his feet at once, coming forward, offered his large hand to Ebenezer.
"I am proud to see you, Mr. Balfour," he said in a fine, deep voice, "and glad that ye are here in time. The wind's fair and the tide upon the turn. We'll see the old coal bucket burning on the Isle of May before tonight."
"Captain Hosien," returned my uncle, "you keep your room unco hot."
"It's a habit I have, Mr. Balfour," said the skipper. "I'm a cold-rife man by my nature, and I have cold blood, sir. There's neither fur nor flannel. No, sir, nor hot rum will warm up what they call the temperature. Sir, it's the same with most men that have been carbonadoed. As they call it in the tropic seas."
I'll have to look up that word. I've never seen it before. Carbonated. It's not carbonated like you would carbonate a drink. Oh yeah, carbonite. It's not frozen in carbonite. It's carbonadoed. Yep, I'll have to look that up. Well, carbonite has a T in it. I don't think it's the same, but you know what? We'll look it up, honey, and we'll find out.
"Well, well, Captain," replied my uncle, "we must all be the way we're made."
But it chanced that this fancy of my captain's had a great share in my misfortunes. For though I had promised myself not to let my kinsmen out of sight, I was both so impatient for a nearer look of the sea, and so sickened by the closeness of the room, that when he told me to
run downstairs and play with yourself a while,
I was fool enough to take him at his word. Away I went, therefore, leaving the two men sitting down to a bottle and a great mass of papers, and crossing the road in front of the inn, walked down upon the beach. With the wind in that quarter, only little wavelets, not much bigger than I had seen upon the lake, beat upon the shore. But the weeds were new to me, some green, some brown and long, and some with little bladders that crackled between my fingers. Even so far up the firth, the smell of seawater was exceedingly salt and stirring. The Covenant, besides, was beginning to shake out her sails, which hung upon the yards in clusters, and the spirit of all that I beheld put me in the thoughts of far-off voyages and foreign places. I looked, too, at the seamen with the skiff, big brown fellows, some in shirts, some with jackets, some with colored handkerchiefs about their throats, one with a brace of pistols stuck in his pockets, two or three with knotty bludgeons. Yeah,
well, but because pirates usually disguise their ships as trading vessels, they put up another ship's flag that they conquered, and when the ship gets too close, they roll that flag down and go up their pirate flag.
That's a good point, honey. Yeah, that's a really good point. Two or three with knotty bludgeons, and all with their case knives. I passed the time of day with one that looked less desperate than his fellows, and asked him of the sailing of the brig. He said they would get under way as soon as the ebb set, and expressed his gladness to be out of port where there were no taverns and fiddlers, but all with such horrifying oaths that I made haste to get away from him. This threw me back on Ransom, who seemed the least wicked of that gang, and who soon came out of the inn and ran to me, crying for a bowl of punch. I told him I would give him no such thing, for neither he nor I was of age for such indulgences. "But ye a glass of ale ye may have, and welcome," said I. He mopped and mowed at me and called me names, but he was glad to get the ale for all that, and presently we were set down at a table in the front room of the inn, both eating and drinking with good appetite. Here it occurred to me that, as the landlord was a man of that country, I might do well to make a friend of him. I offered him a share, as was much the custom of those days, but he was far too great a man to sit with such poor customers as Ransom and myself, and he was leaving the room when I called him back and asked if he knew Mr. Rankellier.
"Hoot, aye," says he, "and a very honest man, and oh, boy, the boy," says he, "was it you that came in with Ebenezer?"
When I had told him, yes.
"You'll be no friend of his?"
he asked, meaning in the Scottish way that I would be no relative. I told him, no, none.
"I thought not,"
said he,
"and yet you have that kind of glyph,"
which means look,
"of Mr. Alexander."
I said it seemed that Ebenezer was ill seen in this country.
"No doubt,"
said the landlord.
"He's a wicked old man, and there's many would like to see him gurning in the tow."
That means grinning on a rope. Ooh.
"Jennet Clouston and Morny Mare that has harried out of the house and home. And yet he was once a fine young fellow too, but that was before the sot gaed abroad, Mr. Alexander, and that was the death of him."
"And what was it?" I asked him.
"Oh, just that he had killed him,"
said the landlord.
"Did you never hear that?"
Let's see.
"He just said before he never heard him."
Let me see what he means here. So he's saying he was a really nice man, and he ran Jennet Clouston, who's the one who cursed him, out of his house, her house and home. But he was a nice young fellow before that. But that was before he, before the report, there was a report that went around about Mr. Alexander, and that was the death of him. I'm not sure exactly what it means. Let's see if we can find out.
A report. I think it was a report.
You're right. A report. Which might be something like a news story or something like that.
I know what a report is.
You do?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
A report is when someone tells something that someone did something bad.
Oh. Well, it could be good, too.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. Just a story. Yeah. Okay.
"Oh, just that he had killed him,"
said the landlord.
"Did you never hear that?"
"And what would he kill him for?" said I.
"And what for? Just to get the place,"
said he. "The place?" said I. "The Shaws?"
"Nay, or the place that I can,"
said he. "Aye, man," said I. "Is that so? Was Alexander the eldest son?"
"'Deed he was,"
said the landlord.
"What else would he have killed him for?"
And with that he went away, as he had been impatient to do from the beginning. Let's see. Oh, I think what he's talking about is, he said, Alexander, so Ebenezer is his uncle, and then he's talking about Alexander, who, I don't think that's his father. So he's saying that Alexander, or that Ebenezer, killed somebody in his family in order to inherit the Shaws. And that was Alexander who he killed. And that Alexander was the oldest son, and that's why Ebenezer killed him. And with that he went away, as he had been impatient to do from the beginning. Of course, I had guessed it a long while ago, but it is one thing to guess, another to know, and I sat stunned with my good fortune and could scarce grow to believe that the same poor lad who had trudged in the dust from Ettrick Forest not 2 days ago was now one of the rich of the earth and had 2 houses in Broadlands, but if he knew how to ride, might mount his horse tomorrow. All these pleasant things and 1,000 others crowded into my mind as I sat staring before me out of the inn window, and paying no heed to what I saw, I only remember that my eye lighted on Captain Hosian down on the pier among the seamen, and speaking with some authority. And presently he came marching back towards the house with no mark of a sailor's clumsiness, but carrying his fine tall figure with a manly bearing, and still with the same sober grave expression on his face. I wondered if it was possible that Ransom's stories could be true, and half disbelieved them, they so fitted so ill with the man's looks. But indeed, he was neither so good as I supposed, nor quite so bad as Ransom did, for in fact he was two men, and left the better one behind as soon as he set foot on board his vessel. Okay, I think I figured it out. I think that Alexander was Ebenezer's older brother, and I think Alexander was also David's dad. And that means that David is the rightful heir to the Shaws. Like, the Shaws, the house, and all the lands that Mr. Ebenezer has, those should all belong to David. And everybody thinks that Ebenezer killed David's dad, but he didn't really kill him. Well, his dad had just died right before the book started. But I think he died of, like, an illness.
Maybe a botched jellyfish thing.
Could be.
They got killed in 5 minutes.
Mm. But that's why David's uncle, Mr. Ebenezer, tried to kill Davy, by making him go up that tower in the dark, hoping that he would fall. Because Davy is the rightful heir to the house and all the lands that Ebenezer has. Yeah, so, and Ebenezer realized that and was like, oh no, this is my stuff, you can't have it. So that's why he tried to kill him. I think that's what it is. That would make sense.
But David is the heir to everything.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And now he's figured it out. Okay, let's see here. The next thing I heard my uncle calling me. Where was I? Of course I had guessed it a long while ago, but it is one thing to guess, another to know, and I sat stunned with my good fortune, and could scarce grow to believe that the same poor lad who had trudged in from the dust of Ettrick Forest not 2 days ago was now one of the rich of the earth, and had a house and broad lands, and if he but knew how to ride, might mount his horse tomorrow. All these pleasant things and 1,000 others crowded into my mind as I sat staring before me out of the inn window. And paying no heed to what I saw, I remember that my eye lighted on Captain Hosian down on the pier among his seamen, and speaking with some authority. And presently he came marching back towards the house, with no mark of a sailor's clumsiness, but carrying a fine tall figure with a manly bearing, and still with the same sober, grave expression on his face. I wondered if it was possible that Ransom's stories could be true, and half disbelieved them, they fitted so ill with the man's looks. But indeed, he was neither so good as I supposed him, nor quite so bad as Ransom did, for in fact he was two men, and left the better one behind as soon as he stepped foot on board his vessel. The next thing I heard my uncle calling me, and found the pair in the road together. It was the captain who addressed me, and that with an air, very flattering to a young lad, of grave equality.
"Sir," said he, "Mr. Balfour tells me great things of you, and for my own part I like your looks. I wish I was for longer here, that we might make the better friends, but we'll make the most of what we have. You shall come on board my brig for 30 minutes, till the ebb sets, and drink a bowl with me."
Now I longed to see the inside of a ship more than words can tell, but I was not going to put myself in jeopardy, and I told him my uncle and I had an appointment with a lawyer.
"Aye, aye," said he. "He passed me word of that. But you see, the boat'll set ashore at the town pier, and that's but a penny stone cast from the Rankillier house."
And here he suddenly leaned down and whispered in my ear,
"Take care of the old Todd. He means mischief. Come aboard till I can get a word with you."
And then, passing his arm through mine, he continued aloud as he set off towards his boat,
But come, what can I bring you from the Carolinas? Any friend of Mr. Balfour's can command. A roll of tobacco, Indian featherwork, a skin of a wild beast, a stone pipe, the mockingbird that mews for all the world like a cat, the cardinal bird that's as red as blood. Take your pick and say your pleasure.
By the time we were at the boatside, he was handing me in. I did not dream of hanging back. I thought, the poor fool, that I had found a good friend and helper, and I was rejoiced to see the ship. As soon as we were all set in our places, the boat was thrust off from the pier and began to move over the waters. And what a pleasure it was in this new movement, and my surprise at our low position, and the appearance of the shores and the growing bigness of the brig as we drew near to it. I could hardly understand what the captain said, and must have answered him at random. As soon as we were alongside, where I sat fairly gaping at the ship's height, the strong humming of the tide against its sides, and the pleasant cries of the seamen at their work, Hosean, declaring that he and I must be the first aboard, ordered a tackle to be sent down from the main yard. In this I was whipped into the air and set down again upon the deck, where the captain stood ready waiting for me, and instantly slipped his back arm under mine. There I stood a while, still a little dizzy with the unsteadiness of all around me, perhaps a little afraid, and yet vastly pleased with the strange sights, and the captain meanwhile pointing out the strangest,
captain
and telling
Evil?
Me, no, captain meanwhile,
well,
and the captain, no, and the captain meanwhile pointing out the strangest,
captain Evil?
And telling me their names and uses. But where is my uncle? Said I suddenly.
Aye,
said Hosean with a sudden grimness.
That's the point.
I felt I was lost. With all my strength, I plucked myself clear of him and ran to the bulwarks. Sure enough, there was the boat pulling for the town with my uncle sitting in the stern. I gave a piercing cry, "Help! Help! Murder!" so that both sides of the anchorage rang with it, and my uncle turned round where he was sitting. It showed me a face full of cruelty and terror. It was the last that I saw. Already strong hands had been plucking me back from the ship's side, and now a thunderbolt seemed to strike me. I saw a great flash of fire and fell senseless. So he's been taken on. He was tricked into getting on board the ship. They got into a little like rowboat from the dock, and his uncle was going to come too, because the captain was really nice to him on the shore. So the captain kind of said, "Oh, no, come with me. It's going to be fine. We'll come see the ship and we'll put you, you know, we'll come right back to shore." And so he tricked him into the rowboat. But when they got to the ship, Davy and the captain got on the ship, but his uncle stayed on the rowboat. And now Davy is on the ship and somebody hit him over the head and he fainted. So that's it. I think his uncle might have made a deal with the captain. Do you think so?
I don't know.
I think he might have.
Can you read it?
Let's see how long the next chapter is. I think we should probably stop for now, sweetheart. I'm going to get you a little lunch ready, okay? And we still have to do our math today, honey. You say bye, podcast listeners.
Bye, podcast listeners.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Next, we will read chapter 7, I Go to Sea in the Brig Covenant of Dissert.